The close cooperation between Khazars and Magyars came to an end when the latter, AD 896, said farewell to the Eurasian steppes, crossed the Carpathian mountain range, and conquered the territory which was to become their lasting habitat. The circumstances of this migration are again controversial, but one can at least grasp its broad outlines. During the closing decades of the 9th century, yet another uncouth player joined the nomad game of musical chairs, the Pechenegs. What little we know about this Turkish tribe is summed up in Constantine's description of them as an insatiably greedy lot of barbarians who, for good money, can be bought to fight other barbarians and the Rus. They lived between the Volga and the Ural rivers under Khazar suzerainty. According to Ibn Rushd, the Khazars raided them every year to collect the tribute due to them. Toward the end of the 9th century, a catastrophe of a nature by no means unusual befell the Pechenegs. They were evicted from their country by their eastern neighbors. These neighbors were none other than the Gus, or Oghuz, whom Ibn Fadlan so much disliked, one of the inexhaustible number of Turkish tribes which from time to time cut loose from their Central Asiatic moorings and drifted west. The displaced Pechenegs tried to settle in Khazaria, but the Khazars beat them off. The Pechenegs continued their westward trek, crossed the Don, and invaded the territory of the Magyars. The Magyars, in turn, were forced to fall back further west into the region between the Dnieper and the Seret rivers. They called this region Etelkots, the land between the rivers. They seem to have settled there in 889, but in 896, the Pechenegs struck again, allied to the Danube Bulgars, whereupon the Magyars withdrew into present-day Hungary. This, in rough outline, is the story of the Magyars' exit from the eastern steppes and the end of the Magyar-Khazar connection. The details are contested. Some historians maintain, with a certain passion, that the Magyars suffered only one defeat, not two, at the hands of the Pechenegs, and that Etelkots was just another name for Lebedia. But we can leave these quibbles to the specialists. More intriguing is the apparent contradiction between the image of the Magyars as mighty warriors and their inglorious retreat from successive habitats. Thus we learn from the Chronicle of Hincmar of Reims that in 862 they raided the fast Frankish Empire, the first of the savage incursions which were to terrorize Europe during the next century. We also hear of a fearful encounter which Saint Cyril, the apostle of the Slavs, had with a Magyar horde in 860 on his way to Khazaria. He was saying his prayers when they rushed at him, Luporum more ululantes, howling in the manner of wolves. His sanctity, however, protected him from harm. Another chronicle mentions that the Magyars and the Khabars came into conflict with the Franks in 881, and Constantine tells us that, some 10 years later, the Magyars made war upon Simeon, ruler of the Danube Bulgars, and trounced him soundly, and came as far as Preslav, and shut him up in the fortress called Mundraga, and returned home. How is one to reconcile all these valiant deeds with the series of retreats from the Don into Hungary, which took place in the same period? It seems that the answer is indicated in the passage in Constantine immediately following the one just quoted. Quote, but after Simeon the Bulgar again made peace with the emperor of the Greeks and got security, he sent to the Pechenegs and made an agreement with them to make war on and annihilate the Magyars. And when the Magyars went away on a campaign, the Pechenegs with Simeon came against the Magyars and completely annihilated their families and chased away miserably the Magyars left to guard their land. But the Magyars returning and finding their country thus desolate and ruined, moved into the country occupied by them today, that is Hungary. End quote. Thus, the bulk of the army was away on a campaign when their land and families were attacked. And to judge by the chronicles mentioned above, they were away raiding distant countries quite frequently, leaving their homes with little protection. They could afford to indulge in this risky habit as long as they had only their Khazar overlords and the peaceful Slavonic tribes as their immediate neighbors. But with the advent of the land-hungry Pechenegs, the situation changed. The disaster described by Constantine may have been only the last of a series of similar incidents. But it may have decided them to seek a new and safer home beyond the mountains, in a country which they already knew from at least two previous forays. There is another consideration which speaks in favor of this hypothesis. The Magyars seem to have acquired the raiding habit only in the second half of the 9th century, about the time when they received that critical blood transfusion from the Khazars. It may have proved a mixed blessing. The Khabars, who were more efficient in war and more manly, became, as we saw, the leading tribe, and infused their hosts with the spirit of adventure, which was soon to turn them into the scourge of Europe, as the Huns had earlier been. They also taught the Magyars, quote, "those very peculiar and characteristic tactics employed since time immemorial by every Turkish nation, Huns, Avars, Turks, Pechenegs, Cumans, and by no other. Light cavalry using the old devices of simulated flight, of shooting while fleeing, of sudden charges with fearful, wolf-like howling." End quote. These methods proved murderously effective during the 9th and 10th centuries when Hungarian raiders invaded Germany, the Balkans, Italy, and even France. But they did not cut much ice against the Pechenegs, who used the same tactics and could howl just as spine-chillingly. Thus, indirectly, by the devious logic of history, the Khazars were instrumental in the establishment of the Hungarian state, whereas the Khazars themselves vanished into the mist. McCartney, pursuing a similar line of thought, went even further in emphasizing the decisive role played by the Khabar transfusion. Quote, "The bulk of the Magyar nation, the true Finno-Ugrians, comparatively, although not very, pacific and sedentary agriculturalists, made their homes in the undulating country west of the Danube. The plain of the Alfold was occupied by the nomadic race of Khabars, true Turks, herdsmen, horsemen, and fighters, the driving force and the army of the nation. This was the race which in Constantine's day still occupied pride of place as the first of the hordes of the Magyars. It was, I believe, chiefly this race of Khabars which raided the Slavs and Russians from the steppe, led the campaign against the Bulgars in 895, in large part and for more than half a century afterwards, was the terror of half Europe." End quote. And yet the Hungarians managed to preserve their ethnic identity. Quote, "The brunt of 60 years of restless and remorseless warfare fell on the Khabars, whose ranks must have been thinned by it to an extraordinary extent. Meanwhile, the true Magyars, living in comparative peace, increased their numbers." End quote. They also succeeded, after the bilingual period, in preserving their original Finno-Ugric language in the midst of their German and Slav neighbors, in contrast to the Danube Bulgars, who lost their original Turkish language and now speak a Slavonic dialect. However, the Khabar influence continued to make itself felt in Hungary, and even after they became separated by the Carpathian Mountains, the Khazar-Magyar connection was not completely severed. According to Vasiliev, in the 10th century, the Hungarian Duke Takshani invited an unknown number of Khazars to settle in his domains. It is not unlikely that these immigrants contained a fair proportion of Khazarian Jews. We may also assume that both the Khabars and the later immigrants brought with them some of their famed craftsmen who taught the Hungarians their arts. In the process of taking possession of their new and permanent home, The Magyars had to evict its former occupants, Moravians and Danube Bulgars, who moved into the regions where they still live. Their other Slavonic neighbors, too, the Serbs and Croats, were already more or less in situ. Thus, as a result of the chain reaction which started in the distant Urals, Guz chasing Pechenegs, chasing Magyars, chasing Bulgars and Moravians, the map of modern Central Europe was beginning to take shape. The shifting kaleidoscope was settling into a more or less stable jigsaw.